Hi, thanks for tuning in to season 5 of the Aced It podcast, where we translate science into sense so you can learn about research in the justice and health fields without having to read a lengthy journal article or report. This season, we're trying something new. Interviews. In each episode, you'll hear from top experts working on research within the JCoin network. I'm so excited. It's like you get a glimpse behind the scenes with these fascinating folks as they talk about what they're learning, the struggles they faced in their projects, and what amazing findings they have so far. Findings that will surely make a difference in the lives of so many. It's almost too good to be true. So with that, I'm Danielle Rudes, your host, coming to you from Sam Houston State University in Texas. With ACID, I do most of the work for you. All you have to do is listen. ACID is a cool and super helpful product brought to you by the Center for Advancing Correctional Excellence, ACE, at George Mason University. For more info, check out jcoinctc.org. Now, let's get started. It is my absolute pleasure to welcome Todd Mulfenter to the podcast today. Todd is a professor and the executive director of the Niatex Foundation, both at the University of Wisconsin. Todd has 20 plus years of experience studying performance improvement in healthcare systems, and his recent work focuses on the opioid epidemic. He serves as one of the PIs on the JCoin, Justice Community Opioid Innovation Network, via his work with the Coordination and Translation Center housed at George Mason University. We are incredibly excited and super lucky to get some of Todd's time today to talk about some of his most recent work. Welcome, Todd. Now, I know I gave you a brief introduction, but that doesn't even begin to cover the work that you're doing. So before I start my barrage of questions, I wonder if you could just take a couple minutes and really introduce yourself so our listeners know the kind of expertise they're listening to today.
This is Todd Mulfenter with the Chess Center at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. And CHESS is like the game chess. It's an acronym. It stands for Center for Health Enhancement Systems Studies. What we do there is a variety of things, but relevant to what we're going to talk about today is we have a technical, regional and national technical assistance centers of how to implement evidence-based practices. And then also, most relevant to the research or what we're going to talk about today is we conduct research on how to best implement evidence-based practices. And in this case, MOUD, Medications for Opioid Use Disorders.
So I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit about the kinds of questions that you and your team are trying to answer in your studies.
The research question we're going to talk about, or the situation even, is how to best implement MOUD, Medications for Opioid Use Disorders, in jail settings. And why we're doing that is when people leave jails, they're 20 times more likely to overdose and die because of an opioid overdose than when they're out in the public every day like you and I. And in fact, it's seen as one of the most risky circumstances and situations as far as reducing overdose deaths and the greatest opportunity. In fact, by looking at that transition and improving on it in Rhode Island, before COVID, they were one of the few states that were able to actually see their overdose deaths go down rather than go up. So within jails, it's difficult. And also, just to differentiate, you have jails, it's where people go when they've been incarcerated or committed a crime in the local area, versus prisons, which is where people tend to stay longer term. Jails tend to be shorter term. However, when people are in jails, it's just they have situations where if they were on certain MOUDs, you want them to be able to continue those. If they were regular users, they're going to have withdrawal symptoms. And it's just a great opportunity to get people connected with services and connected in a way that they'll be much safer during that transition.
And where does your team do this kind of work?
The situation or circumstances you have is there's a lot of jails around the country that simply don't provide these services, or if they do, it's in a very limited fashion. And so what we want to do in our research is look for ways to better implement and increase the use of MOUDs. And when we say MOUDs, we primarily mean methadone, buprenorphine, and or Suboxone, and injectable naltrexone and or Vivitrol. And so you have the situation where the use of these medications, pharmacotherapies, are much less in jail settings than they are in community settings where people are receiving healthcare. And so during our study, we wanted to figure out ways to try to change that statistic.
That is so interesting. What do you know about what works inside these institutions that you find useful for the work that your team is doing?
There's two implementation practices that have been seen to be pretty effective over the past 5 years. One is what they call coaching, where you have an external consultant or coach work with the jail, work with them on organizational change, skills and behaviors, and work with them as experts in MOUD implementation. You know, what policies do you put in place? What kind of trainings do you have? What kind of issues can come up and how to address them, things like that. So that was one evidence-based practice, was coaching. And with that, we wanted to test high-dose coaching, which means we would talk to the jail sites once a month for 18 months, or we were going to do low-dose coaching, where we would talk to the sites once a quarter for the 18 months. So we had sort of this high dose, low dose to see, you know, basically how low can you go or can you go lower? And then also the other evidence-based practice is something called ECHO. And with that, that's a practice that's been used to train mostly physicians and other clinicians on how to provide MOUDs. And in doing it, using teleconference technology and using case presentations, which is sort of a classic teaching technique for physicians where you present a case around different patients. And through that case, you use it as a teaching opportunity. You know, this is, you know, in this situation, this is what you do. This is how you do it. And it gives the physicians, nurse practitioners, physician assistants, or counselors a chance to also ask questions about things that they're concerned about. And so in our trial, we had what we call a 2x2 trial, where we had, you know, across the top, high-dose coaching, low-dose coaching, and along the other side of the 2x2 matrix, we had echo and no echo. And so what we wanted to do is see which of those would do best comparatively, and increasing the use of the combination of methadone, buprenorphine, or injectable naltrexone. And so that was the basic trial.
So COVID happened basically after your study got funded. Did you find that the pandemic got in the way at all of any of the work that you were doing, or did it affect your studies in any way?
You know, the reduction in jail populations as a result of COVID. We saw some telehealth, not a lot, in the people with the jails we were working with. And we've seen some continue, not a lot. Mostly they have gone back to in-person kind of services. What we've seen from sort of a study perspective is the study is going much smoother now because there's fewer interruptions due to what the jails would call, you know, COVID lockdowns. You know, whenever there was a COVID spread happening, they had to work on reducing the population, getting people safely distanced, and you know, being able to do the medication screenings and or the you know, substance use disorder, opioid use disorder screenings and treatment, you know, really would sometimes take a back seat. And sometimes they just wouldn't have the staff for it because staff would be out because of COVID. Now, past that, we have far fewer interruptions because of those situations. Sometimes the jails are being squeezed, of course, because of staff shortages, but it really hasn't, thankfully, hasn't interrupted, you know, the ability to provide the screenings and pharmacotherapies as we'd like.
Not that everything you haven't said already isn't super interesting, but my favorite question is, tell me about your findings.
What we found is Well, first of all, you know, what we've found is this really important to keep in mind is jails more or less is really behind other parts of healthcare or other parts of the healthcare system or other situations where healthcare is provided. Most jails treat opioid use disorders with what they call comfort medications, which helps reduce some of the withdrawal symptoms, but by no means does it alleviate it. And then that's sort of it right now. And if they do pick up opioid use disorders at time of discharge, sometimes, you know, they'll say, you know, hey, you should you should do something about this or and the like. But that is the typical situation, which is far different than when you have community treatment providers and the like. And so what we have found is we've sort of gone from people giving comfort meds, or sometimes, you know, jails would also be providing injectable naltrexone, which you can inject in it and it prevents any opioid effects for 30 days. Some folks were doing that prior to release. And then other people were doing different pieces along the cascade of care, what we call it. And that cascade is you screen for opioid use disorder. If you identify it, you set the person up in some kind of treatment. You provide the treatment, ideally within the jail setting versus waiting until release or prior to release. And then very importantly, you work on that transition we talked about earlier of making sure as the person leaves the jail setting and goes out in the community that they have a transition where they're on some kind of MOUD or pharmacotherapy and that continues. It's very important. In our study, about half the jails we are working with have formal relationships with community providers. And in either circumstances, this is really important for the jails to, you know, work on that transition and see it as something they have some responsibility for.
And hey, I know we're wrapping up here, but can I just bend your ear for one more second and ask you if there's anything else in terms of findings that you would be willing to share with our listeners?
There's just a lot of need and opportunity there. You know, they within the jails, you have things all the way from needing to be able to pay for the medications to the staff being accepting of the medication, you know, some stigma kind of issues, to workflow issues, how to, you know, address those. And we even did an opinion survey of attitudes towards MOUD. We found mixed reception, honestly, within the jails, which is you know, glass half full or glass half empty. We were pleased to see that, you know, quite a few folks were quite supportive of it. But we did also that same survey with community providers, and the community providers tended to be more accepting of the MOUDs and more consistent in their thinking about it. In other words, you can tell they had spent more time sort of talking about it and thinking about it. As far as which of the different implementation practices have done better, it's still too early in the trial to provide statistics or evidence around that. However, we are seeing all the jails we're working with, or actually most of them, are working on improving this cascade of care and seeing, you know, typically some improvements as a result of it. So we really see this trial is an opportunity to get more safe evidence-based practices out to people who need it and can benefit from it, particularly from an overdose risk perspective. And I really appreciated the JCOIN Network and NIDA and the support to be able to really look into these questions and develop practices that can be provided to other jails in the future and to improve the safety and health of their communities.
Dr. Mohlfenter, the work that you are doing with your team to help so many people is absolutely inspiring, and I cannot thank you enough for joining us on the podcast today. If you want to know more about Todd and the work that he's doing, you can look him up on the University of Wisconsin website, or if you want to go right to the center's website and get the goods immediately, you can go to center.chess, that's C-H-E-S-S, www.wisc.edu. Todd, it has been awesome to have you with us today. That wraps another episode of the ASTIT podcast. We thank you for listening to ASTIT, where we translate science into sense. Also, remember, you can find one-page summary overviews written in plain language for all of the research we cover on this podcast on our website, jcoinctc.org. Our conveniently packaged research summaries may help you remember what you heard here, and they will help you translate this research to your staff, friends, students, or colleagues. ASTIT is part of the NIDA-funded Justice Community Opioid Innovation Network, or JCOIN, through the Coordination and Translation Center, CTC, housed at the Center for Advancing Correctional Excellence, ACE, at George Mason University. Tune in again for more science and more sense with ASTIT.